although I might be tired, it's nothing compared to what the House Democrats had to go through over the last few days as the House Republicans, under the leadership of Kurt Dowd, did their usual shenanigans at the end of a session, and needless to say, incompetency ensued. Melissa Hortman is our Democrat of the Day, 36B. She is the House Minority Leader, and she's kind enough to join us to give us a recap of what the session was that just took place. Representative, thank you very much for the time.
It's nice to be with you.
It is very nice to be with you, and I imagine it's going to be nice getting some normal hours on in here. It was more of the same from Kurt Dowd and the Republicans, waiting to the last second and then throwing a ton of bills out there where people just didn't have time to read what was in them, correct?
Well, yes, that's the frustrating thing, you know, and I was listening to you talk about all the work that you got done at home yesterday, and you clearly got more accomplished than the Minnesota legislature yesterday, because what they did is they waited until the very end of the year to try to do everything and then ran out of time. And now they want to run around and say, oh, it's the governor's fault. It's the Democrats' fault. Maybe it was the barometric pressure. They just don't have results, and all they have is a big pile of excuses.
Well, and I think the most common example of why it is the Republicans' fault. The Republicans wanted to put that constitutional amendment about the spending of transportation dollars. They wanted to put that on the ballot this year. They ran out of time themselves. They didn't even get a vote on that in the Senate, so that will not be on the ballot this year. It was kind of a situation where that's just proof positive of what you just said. The Republicans' time management was so poor, it ended up costing Minnesotans, you know, having responsible leadership.
You know, and I wonder if they were just trying to look busy the whole time anyway, because they don't actually want to do most of the things that Minnesotans want them to do. They don't like giving schools funding. They don't want to, cross their donors on the opioid abuse issue. And so maybe the objective was just to look busy anyway, not get any results, and then blame other people.
The governor, this was also a tactic that Dowd feels like he's had some success with, in basically overriding the governor to basically just throw 1,000 things at him at a very short notice and hope something gets signed into law that he doesn't pay attention to. It actually has happened. There's been a few things that got passed that I think snuck under the radar. But the reality is the governor was expecting this. From the beginning of the session, he said, don't wait until the last second. If you want things to have a chance to come back and get revisited in the House and the Senate, you need to make sure these bills get passed in a timely manner. And, of course, the Republicans, I don't think, really had any intention of doing that.
Well, you're right. You know, the governor has got their playbook down. It's been the same playbook since 2011. The Republicans were in charge under Mark Dayton for 6 of his 8 years. And in those 6 years, their strategy has always been, let's put a massive pile of garbage in front of them, and we'll take out some pieces of the garbage, and then we'll say that we're real heroes for being reasonable and that he's unreasonable for not signing the rest of the garbage. And in the cases where the state government will shut down and the governor has no choice, he's had to take some bad policy provisions that Republicans have put in front of him. But this year, what they miscalculated is nobody needs anything. This is the second year in the budget cycle, and so the budget's already in place. If the governor didn't sign a single bill into law, nothing would stop functioning in the state of Minnesota. So really, it was in their interest to work with the governor. They just couldn't bring themselves to do it.
Let's talk about what happened in the House, though. I mean, my goodness, you and I have talked in the past about the palatable disdain that the Republican leadership has for the mere existence of Democrats being in the House. That seemed to be, once again, modus operandi of the Republican Party, whether it was gun control bills, hands-free cell phone usage, or just, hey, can we see the bill before the 990-page bill more than 2 hours before we're supposed to vote on it? It was the level of disrespect, yelling, and just mean-spirited nature of the Republicans in the House. It was quite palatable. I don't think anyone missed that this time around.
Well, 2 nights before the end of the session, Speaker Dowd was pretty frustrated with life because he wasn't getting anything done, and he started muting Democrats on the floor. And this is just not something we do in a democratic society, is mute our opponents. That's sort of the way they approach it maybe in China or Russia. But in a democracy, you might be irritated by the minority party, but you don't have the right to mute them. In the instances where they did work with us, they had success. And so if they would have worked with us more, we could have done more this session. You know, the bonding bill was a great success because Democrats were involved. The pension bill got through because of Democrats' push from the word go. And if they would have worked with us, we could have done something on the opioid abuse epidemic. We could have done something to remedy the fact that seniors are being abused and neglected in nursing homes in the state of Minnesota. We could have done something on distracted driving. This is the one that's super irritating. So we find out that there's 54 votes in the Republican caucus to enact the distracted driving reforms, to go to hands-free. But they won't bring the bill to the floor. It needs 68 votes to pass. They know there's well over 14 Democratic votes to do the distracted driving bill. But they won't bring it to the floor because 13 members of their caucus are opposed. That's an outrage.
Well, and it was interesting because this, and we've talked about how these Republicans, especially metro area Republicans, are trying to reinvent themselves as these moderates. And one of the issues a lot of Republicans in the metro area were trying to push with this, I'm for this, getting hands-free devices, getting rid of distracted driving as best as we can here in the state of Minnesota. And I mean, more it was Dario Anselmo of Edina was one of the ones that was championing this bill. It was a shock that every Republican voted down bringing the bill to the floor. I mean, that just tells you where their priorities are.
They're very out of touch. You know, the leadership of the Republicans in the Minnesota House has a very skewed view of what the average Minnesotan wants or is interested in. They've been spending too much time with Republican caucus attendees and have no idea where the middle actually is anymore. You know, we used to have sort of the Minnesota way, which was we were in partisan warfare on a couple of those issues where we strongly disagree, you know, minimum wage, choice. But now we're in all-out partisan warfare on everything. And it's so unnecessary. It's really held back our accomplishments as a legislature of what we could do together. This will go down in history, I think, as the least productive Minnesota legislative session, I think maybe in history, but definitely within about 10 years.
You did talk about the pension bill. That had wide approval. I think a lot of Republicans were terrified against going against that bill, frankly, in this election cycle. But that was a bipartisan effort that did get through. That was a bit of one ray of sunshine this session.
That's true. There are two silver linings, the bonding bill and the pension bill. The rest of the session is really a total fiasco. You look at the very first thing Republicans did. They couldn't wait to get it to the floor. They were in a big hurry. Let's get this raise bill to the floor. Let's raise our pay 45%. We can't do anything else until we vote ourselves a huge raise. And then the state employees had to wait on their pensions for the closing minutes of the legislative session. You know, several months after state legislators took care of themselves, they finally got around to the things that benefited other people. But the really, really irritating part about the session was big money coming in and killing the good work we could have done to try to prevent some of these opioid overdose deaths and some of the abuse and neglect that's happening with elders. When you have a political party like the Republicans in control of the Minnesota House and Minnesota Senate who are listening to campaign donors instead of suffering Minnesota families, you know you have the wrong people in charge.
The bonding bill, I will say, Representative, and once again, Representative Melissa Hortman, the House Minority Leader, joining us today. When you bring up the bonding bill, that sounded like it was more of a mixed bag. I mean, there were some concessions because clearly there's a lot of pork in this for the majority party and they want to get this bill through. Dayton was very clear that some things had to be in there. But, I mean, you had a large chunk of concrete fall out of the river, the River Center parking ramp the other day. I mean, clearly that needs upgrades, and they less than money than requested there. Other things, Stone Arch Bridge, talk about the veterans homes and stuff. It has money for the veterans home, but it's going to be used in the Vikings Reserve accounts as opposed to, you know, what I think most of us would justify. Sure, if you need to raise a few tax dollars to go help the veterans, why not? By all means. I mean, just this shifting of money around. The education stuff that came up later on was also kind of just, it seemed a little bit of smoke and mirrors. Do you really feel the bonding bill was a good success, or are we kind of still looking at it as it's imperfect, it's sausage making, so henceforth it's ugly, but yes, it's good enough?
Definitely sausage. I mean, I think the worst thing about it was using the stadium reserve account for those veterans homes, and that was taken out. But there is a really questionable budget piece in there, because Republicans just can't allow themselves to vote for a bonding bill that's larger than 825. They use this shifting gimmick by selling bonds and using revenue from the environmental trust fund. It's really questionable whether it's even legal what they're doing. And then number two, you definitely have to pay a higher interest rate. So I think if you're a fiscal conservative, at some point you just have to say, this is stupid. Why are we playing this shell game? Let's get the cheaper general obligation bonds and do it the right way. But no, we had to go through the gymnastics of this potentially illegal funding mechanism just to get a decent sized bonding bill.
One thing that I'm a little lost. I've looked around. I really can't find it. And you may be able to help me with this. The sulfate water standards for wild rice. I mean, obviously, the people that gather wild rice, primarily Native Americans, were against this free-for-all. Governor Dayton had vetoed that bill. Did the Republicans get an abridged version of that back at the governor?
There is a revised version headed to the governor's desk. And I honestly think with all the chaos at the end of the session, the governor has not had an opportunity to even know what's in that amended version. That amended version that sent back to the governor came through in the midst, in between the 990-page budget bill and the tax plus education bill. So honestly, I think any kind of careful, well-thought-through work was not happening there in the last 48 hours of session.
Governor Dayton did manage to wrangle a few things away as well. The minimum wage, the tip credit, which was something that Republicans were championing, basically trying to tear down the minimum wage scale in the state. It sounds like out of the supplemental budget bill that was pulled as one of, I mean, I think Dayton had 117 objections. They did pull 71 of those 117, but were basically telling Dayton that he had to go with the rest of them. The protest bill, Dayton was very clear. He said, you know, I'm not against raising penalties on protesters. It's just your language is so vague is that you can start applying this where there's a minimal bus route, and we have to be very careful about how we do this if we're going to start limiting the right to protest, which is in the Constitution, as well as also, and you brought up the opiate issue. I know that there's nothing that happened with opiates, and I know that nothing happened with gun safety as well. But the reality is, I think the Democrats did have a win there by putting these Republicans back on their heels and making them go out and take the wildly unpopular stances in the House and Senate to basically knock down those bills. I think you made a very big image of what this upcoming election's all about.
Well, yes, the Republicans produced big zeros where Minnesotans were really demanding action. But, you know, I think you brought up at the beginning of your comments that the governor deserves a lot of credit for being a great goalie. You know, his entire term as governor, he's done a fantastic job for Minnesotans and especially for progressives in Minnesota, being a goalie and blocking really bad policy. And I know he harbored a dream at one point of being on a U.S. Olympic hockey team, but I think he deserves an Olympic gold medal for the goalie work he did this session. He really blocked a lot of bad policy. And I think there's still some more goalie work for him to do between now and when all the bills are vetoed or signed.
Well, and I don't know who is the author of the news story, but I love the imagery of saying Dayton pouring cold water on Kurt Dowd after the special session from a few years ago where Kurt Dowd bragged about pouring water on Mark Dayton. I thought that was apropos for sure. One final question about the bills that came through. The Met Council, there was a desire by the Republicans to redo this. Basically, the way that the council's appointed, that the Republicans wanted to switch that to a different standard as opposed to, I believe, the governor appoints 16 members by district and a chair who's the full-time member. Where did that bill end up? Is that at the governor's desk as well for him to either sign or veto?
I think there is a standalone that made it through the process, as well as that provision originally at one time being in the 990-page monstrosity. I think the standalone did go. I think that the governor's indicated in the past that's not something he's interested in doing. You know, one of the things they tried to do a lot of was take executive branch power. And the governor just said, look, you're doing it in energy, you're doing it in commerce, you're doing it in health, you're doing it in the Met Council. I'm not going to just give you a bunch of executive authority. So, I mean, they kept trying, but I think that one will be batted down as well.
Well, hopefully so. Now, we have an election coming up here. You are running again for 36B. As a matter of fact, I believe your website is melissahortman.com, correct?
That's it.
MelissaHortman.com. You are the minority leader. Hence, if the Democrats were to take back the House, there would probably be, you know, a strong bet that you would become the Speaker of the House. Can I ask, if you were to become Speaker, would it be a goal of yours to prevent this kind of last-second shenanigans with these bills from happening that say that any bill that's going to be considered for a vote has to be out 3 days before the end of session for everyone to review before a vote, so 3 days before a vote, a bill is released? Is that something that you would like to make a rule within the House?
Yes, well, first, I do think we have a very good chance of taking the Minnesota House. You know, the average pickup for the party opposite the president in a midterm is 17 seats in the Minnesota House. We need 11. We have fantastic candidates, as you know. So I think we've got a shot. We, of course, have to work incredibly hard to get a majority. If we do, regardless of who is the speaker, and I imagine I would probably run for that job, I can assure you that we would manage the institution better than the Republicans because our track record bears that out. The 4 years that Margaret Anderson Kelleher was the speaker, the 2 years that Paul Thiessen was the speaker, bills got hearings, the process worked, there were multiple conference committees, there were multiple bills, not just one 990-page monstrosity. So the place just runs better when Democrats are in charge. We actually care what the public thinks. And so we create opportunities for the public to come in and to participate in the lawmaking. And when you look at the Republican performance, you know, from 05 to 11, they're really good at shutting down the government. They're really good at shutting out the people. And Democrats are just better at getting the job done. So I would expect that that would be the case if we take over.
You would hope so, although if I can make the request, if you do become Speaker, if something of this grand nature does happen and puts a big smile on my face, do keep that mute button for Kurt Dowd's first speech to the House as the minority leader, and then give him a little taste of his own medicine before you rip that thing out and throw it in the trash, okay?
I don't know. I think the highest goal of my life right now is to remove that mute button and make sure it can't be reinstalled. That has no place in a democracy. We can daydream about muting Kurt Dowd, but in a democracy, it's just not how we should operate.
Absolutely.
So I wouldn't even mute him.
But yeah, I'm glad you. That's another minor step one if the Democrats take back the House. I do have a listener here that's asked about preemptive. I know that was a big issue of the Republicans. If you don't mind me asking about that, I know Republicans like to talk about keep your big city slicker noses out of our business and our districts, but they sure hate it when Minneapolis or St. Paul does something because then they can't help but stick their nose into into those districts through a preemptive bill. Where do you think preemption is going to go? I mean, this is not going to stop. I mean, this is what the Republicans, not only here in this state, but nationwide, this is their big goal, is to try to prevent the major cities from overruling the state governments, which have not taken care of their own citizens. And this is basically a way for them to say, no, you can't even do that.
Well, this is the problem with today's Republican Party. It is completely controlled by corporate interests that want to squash the power of the people. And so the corporate interests that really are driving the Republican Party of today don't want to see things like minimum wage increases in cities like Minneapolis and St. Paul, or better sick leave standards. So there used to be a Republican Party that had moderates, that had good corporate citizens in it. And this sort of total dominance by Koch brothers type interests means that they're just really focused on squashing populism wherever it can crop up. And I think it's really up to voters this election to show up and make sure this completely special interest dominated Republican Party doesn't have another chance to screw up another legislative session.
I think for the Supreme Court ruling today proves once again, it's like these elections have consequences, and that Neil Gorsuch seat was the deciding factor in that election, in that Supreme Court ruling. End of story, end of discussion. Anyone that wants to sit there and say, oh, well, it doesn't matter if a vote, for goodness sakes, if we haven't learned that lesson yet, I don't know what it would take to do so. But once again, the House is in play. We got the governor's race. We've got two Senate races. We have all eight Minnesota House seats, and we've got statewide offices as well. There's a lot riding on this election. And once again, nothing would put a smile on my face more than seeing Representative Melissa Hortman as the Speaker of the House in the next session. Your leadership, can I say, Representative, your leadership against such an obnoxious foe has been exceptional, and I really have been proud that DFL found you to be that voice there against the mountain and tidal wave of belligerence that was coming from across the aisle.
Well, thank you. That's very, very kind. And I think the points you make about the election are well taken. There's never an election that doesn't matter. People like to say things like, this is the most important election of our lifetime. Not true. They're all important. Every single election, every single level, because people who run for city council make really important decisions at the city level, and sometimes they go up through the system. So every election, every time, we all need to be there and make sure we're voting for good people.
MelissaHortman.com. You can help out her campaign. I imagine door knocking is going on as we're into the nicer months here. After, you're going to get a few days worth of rest, hopefully, after this last weekend. MelissaHortman.com. MelissaHortman.com. I'll link to this a little bit later on. But all my best in your election. And, God willing, you are going to be the majority leader next session. I really do hope that's the case.
Well, thanks a lot. I hope you have a great rest of your day. And I've got to catch up with you on my gardening.
No, my pleasure. I'd be happy to help you. It does help to have some kids that you can subject to helping out whether they want to or not. So that's the case. Representative Melissa Hortman, the House Minority Leader, kind enough to join us. Democrat of the Day will spotlight that one as well. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you. Take care.
Take care. MelissaHortman.com. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950.